Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
And ready to go. Hot Mike with Hunter Withrow underway. The Monday edition, the hangover of the NFL draft edition, has arrived.
Oh, yes.
Chad Withrow is back.
We feasted on draft picks all weekend, and now we're paying the price.
Yes, that's
on this Monday.
That's right. We recap the draft throughout today's show. Tank Williams, NFL draft analyst and former NFL safety, he will be on the show coming up in about 40 minutes. Plus, Cynthia Freeland, friend of the show, NFL Network. She joins us in hour number two. We've got our top quarterbacks from the draft and more. Chad, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Hutton. Good to be back with you.
Yes. How was the trip? Fine?
It was good. Good. It was good. Yeah, nice little winding drive up the mountain in
scenic.
North Carolina, but very, very scenic. Passed about 11 waterfalls on the way up. Very nice. Didn't get to see a bear. Every time I'm in the mountains, I want to see bears, but didn't see one. The only bears that I watched all weekend were Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. Those are the bears that I know about now.
Maybe the bears will be a part of our top drafts of the of the 2024 draft.
Likely not, though.
Maybe not. Already looking ahead to the 2025 draft. If you look at the mock draft that many are putting out, Shedeur Sanders is in the first round. Some have them as the first quarterback selected. Deion Sanders certainly would. Deion Sanders is also proclaiming that, well, his Colorado Buffaloes, they're going to be playing in a bowl game.
And for you just coming out here in this inclement weather, God bless all of you. Darn it, you're awesome. I would be remiss not to start our season out, and this is pretty much the start, without acknowledging the beautiful Miss Peggy. Where you at, girl? Where's Peggy? Peggy, wherever you are, I love you. We appreciate you. And our goal is we're going to get you to a bowl game, baby. Lead it out. God bless you.
2 years after he takes over Colorado's program, that was awful, that had won a game. 2 years after that, he's saying we're going to get to a bowl game. Surface level, Chad, that would be, he's off to a great start. He brings on tons of pressure, expectation, because of all the hype behind him, because of all the eyeballs on the program. Chad, I haven't heard very much this year. There's a big difference in spring football this year and last year, and the difference is Deion and Colorado. We were discussing the massive crowd at Colorado a year ago, and now the crowd has certainly dwindled. Not great. The throwback-sized crowd for the spring game, according to Brian Howell. Poor weather. It looks like pre-prime crowd at this point. Yeah, that looks like a Vanderbilt home game, Jack.
Yeah. Vandy likes to get that crowd for a regular season game for sure.
Yeah.
It was bad weather. I mean, I see spring games now, and I'm thinking the fact that anyone went out there in that weather to watch a spring game, I mean, good for them. I don't make a big fuss over the crowd.
But we compared it to last year.
I think if you look at a lot of places where it goes from year one to year two, you know, I'm trying to look up Nebraska's attendance for this past weekend, because that was another Matt Rhule year one to year two.
Yeah.
Now, Nebraska is a little bit different because they usually sell out every spring game regardless of who's coaching there. It's a big deal. I cannot find the attendance. Davey will find that and let us know. But I'm not putting too much stock in it. There's always a drop-off year one, year two for a new coach at a school. Weather was really bad. Here's my takeaway from that pep talk to the crowd and Miss Peggy, who's the older lady, who's the season ticket holder that I know a lot of different places profiled last year as a big Colorado Buffaloes fan. It's that Deion Sanders, with all the pomp and circumstance that he brings to every situation he's in, and how much he is going to talk trash about everything, and he's going to come in with a mentality of, we're here to win championships. You know, we're not coming. We're already here, I think is what he said after they beat TCU in game one.
Yes.
They go from that.
Do you believe?
To, hey, we're going to get you to a bowl game this year. That's realistic expectations. I'm not going to crush the guy, Because I'm looking at the schedule and I'm thinking, hey, if they get to a bowl game in year two, that's a good thing. But Deion Sanders in year one at Colorado would probably have told you they'd be thinking conference or national championship in year two. And that's where they'd be competing. I think year one humbled Deion a little bit. Coach Prime is now going into year two saying, hey, our goal is to get to a bowl game. We want to get Miss Peggy to a bowl game, which is six wins. That's a lower level of expectation than I thought we'd be hearing from Deion Sanders. It's also a realistic level of expectation that he should be thinking about. Davey, what was that Nebraska spring attendance for the game?
It was 60,452.
60,452. Now, they're always having huge crowds for the game, but that's year one, Matt Rhule to year two also. So, look, some places they pack them in for spring games. I think the whole tenor of spring games across college football has changed a lot.
No doubt.
And people don't care as much now.
Well, but people care about Colorado. Or they did. We'll see if they continue to do. Like, because they're pulling massive numbers. They're pulling NFL draft-like numbers. NFL draft, 12 million tuned in to the first round Thursday for an event that for the sport that doesn't even feature the ball it's played with. People set and watch that. Now, here is Shedeur Sanders, who, coming off of last year, is discussing the energy and the energy that they're bringing into 2024.
Going on, but I feel like we got all the negative energy out the building. So now it's just a positive vibe now. It's no really complaining. It's no anything about, we got to go out there and play with a clear mind. And when everybody's going to want the ball, everybody's going to want their part. But at the end of the day, I don't care if I end up each game with 150 yards. You know, like, I'm just trying to win this year. That's the biggest thing. Is
negative energy. I mean, number one recruiting class in the portal last year. I mean, would those teams say that the players that left were a part of negative energy? I doubt it. And I didn't hear a bunch of discussion about negative energy when they were beating TCU and starting out, what, 4-0, Chad?
Well, look, when you're playing daddy ball, okay, and that's going to be the perception from the outside for a lot of people. Shedeur Sanders is going to start a lot of places. It's not like he's playing player at quarterback, or Shiloh. Pretty good player at safety, and it's better than most of what Colorado has. But when your whole thing is you and your sons, and you're talking up your kids and how you're going to dictate the NFL draft and where they go, that can be a problem when you're coaching at the highest levels of college football. You know, that can be a problem if you're coaching travel ball and you got multiple kids on the team and you're always hyping them up over other kids. So there's an issue at Colorado football. I mean, one of their best players leaves and says, I'm not about, you know, TikTok or just going viral. You know, I'm about substance. Dylan Edwards, their star running back, is now going to Kansas State, has transferred out. So there is negative around that program going into this season. I'm fascinated to watch it. Deion Sanders just told us that the goal is a bowl game, which seems pretty small, but for this Colorado team, based off of last year and based off of the bad offseason they've had, that is a realistic goal and also one they should be striving for, and stop the nonsense about doing more than that right now, because quite frankly, they're not capable. And I think Shedeur Sanders is almost recognizing that with what he's saying this game.
We haven't seen the same portal, you know, class or anything like that. And Cormani McClain, to be fair to the whole story, though, he did leave and say, hey, I'm going to go to a real program that's not about clicks. He went there as a five-star defensive back and then didn't play because of issues behind the scenes, whether it be showing up on time or whatever. Deion was sending a message to him. So at least I do think Deion Sanders holds players accountable. I do. The comments towards the end of last season where he said, hey, you know, my guys just aren't focused. You know, he's calling them out, saying that they're looking ahead to different things, either in the portal, headed pro, looking for the offseason, whatever it might be. He didn't like the effort that was being put forth in the second half of some of these games. I like the brutal honesty that he brings there. But there's always going to be the flash and the pomp and circumstance. And that's where the expectation and the hype meets reality. And we saw that midseason last year. Specifically, it all started with the Stanford game. Now, if they get that game, if they don't lose to Stanford, there's a different tenor to that season. They're playing in the postseason. And now we're looking at this going, well, does the momentum carry over? Or are we looking at Shedeur Sanders and company leaving along with Deion for another job? Who knows?
Well, like,
is long-term, or is this just coaching the players he wants to coach?
I think it's going to be very short-term, the way I watch this program. And just from the outside looking in, I don't think that he's building this thing to sustain for a long tenure in Colorado. I feel like he's coaching the team now to try to maximize what he can in a short time while his sons are playing, and that everything after that is not really being planned right now for Deion Sanders.
He did change his staff, which is, I mean, he went in. Sean Lewis is gone as the OC. The new there's a new offensive line coach that was probably needed based on the way they played.
Some of that he changed, some changed for him because they wanted to leave.
Sure.
After a year of coaching with Deion Sanders. And I think that's the hard balance to strike is, I don't think you're wrong, Hutton. I do think that he is about substance when coaching the team, and he is a guy who believes in personal accountability.
I think he wants to
do it. And working hard. He wants to stand for the right things. And when you really listen to him in interviews, he talks about a lot of the right things and players doing those right things. I also think it's difficult when you are a walking paradox that is blinged out.
Who backed it up.
That is talking about, you know, the cars you drive and the suits you wear and running guys off. And you're talking a lot about superficial things that you get when you have a lot of money, and also trying to be about something that's greater than that and being a man of substance while also being a man of flair. It's a difficult balance to strike. So Kermani McClain's a good example of that, right? You're right. The kid's probably, you know, not in the right headspace right now to be a responsible, accountable player for someone. And when he runs off at the mouth, doesn't really mean a lot. But I can also see where Kermani McClain probably got sold a bill of goods about going to Colorado and being the program of Lil Wayne and Coach Prime going blinged out at all times. And, you know, having a Maybach show up to recruit you. There's a little bit of both here. Like, you can be about both, but when you're so loud about being about the money and one thing, and then you want to also be about personal responsibility, accountability, hard work, humility, all these other things, it's difficult to walk that tightrope. And I think we're seeing some of that with his program right now.
Yeah, there's some preacher.
It's
in
confusing
it.
About there's some Righteous Gemstones preacher to it, not just preacher. There's some outlandish preacher.
I don't think Deion's running over anyone in the parking lot. So, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, there's a
little bit of televangelist.
There is, but unlike the players on his roster, Deion backed it up in his career. You know, two sport pro athlete, all star. You know, you've got all these different things, which I think would be very. He says he doesn't want to coach in the pros because of the mindset factor of the player versus coach and who's really running the team. Kermani McClain is a good example of running his mouth and not backing it up. There are several teams, according to On3 and 24/7 Sports, not reaching out to him. But they're not even trying to go after the former five star a year later because of things behind the scenes.
And again, I think this is why
Deion didn't play.
This is why I have so many question marks about Deion, though, because the coaches you go against don't care about how good you were as a player.
No. They don't.
And that's his big sell. Like, yeah, he can talk all he wants because he's one of the greatest defensive backs, maybe the greatest of all time. I mean, he's one of the greatest NFL players ever, and he's a multi-sport athlete who excelled in everything. But he's not yet excelled as a major power now four level college coach yet. And I think that's the point of what other programs are going to recruit against with him. Colorado, it's pretty easy to recruit against Colorado's history
sure. In
the last 20 years also. And he's trying to supplement that image and get rid of that and say, okay, we're something different now. I'm fascinated by the tightrope act of what he's trying to pull off, where I think he's done it right, and where I think he could improve, and how difficult it is to not really be going hard at the high school recruiting part of this.
Yeah, that's...
Which he's not really doing right now.
But, like, for what he's accomplished versus what Lincoln Riley or Ryan Day or... You know, there's several of these coaches that have not reached the pinnacle of Kirby Smart. There's Kirby Smart and everyone else right now. So, I mean, he's put his name in the list, and we're start mentioning college coaches in the middle, within a 12-month time frame. when he hasn't accomplished all that much.
No, I so, mean, he's put himself on that list because of who he is.
But you have Mark Stoops, who is a top 10 paid college football coach, and Dion, who is receiving the expectation and the hype behind it. He wants that. That's how he is mentioned in these top coaches' name, like in the list. But it's not like he's the only one that is praised, not just, I'm not saying even nationally, even just by the college that he's coaching for not really accomplishing much, just reaching a standard that is acceptable or above the line that you're used to at said university, a la Kentucky, right? Comparing some of the other coaches, a lot of coaches right now haven't accomplished all that much.
No, but I mean, Mark Stoops has been at it for
a bowl game, and yeah, but I mean, they're winning
for years. He was an offensive coordinator. He was at Florida State. He's won there.
Sure,
Lincoln Riley's been to playoffs.
But in terms of just results,
a good offensive coach.
But just pure results.
I mean, look, he hasn't had a chance to.
He's coaching the SEC.
He's been there 1 year, and he went 3-9.
No, they won four games.
4-8.
Four or five games.
In 1 year. I mean, I'm saying this. He's been a major college coach for 1 year. Like, in FBS football, he's been a coach for 1 year. So he can only accomplish what he can accomplish in that 1 year. What's also going to work against him, and this is not really his fault, but the massive amount of eyeballs on him.
Yeah, that's right.
And the fame and celebrity he brings into it, all the talk about it, is going to get everyone else saying, well, there's a lot of talk about you for a guy, you know, who goes 4-8
right
in this 1 year. Well, you know, whose fault is that? Is that the media's fault for paying so much attention to him, or is that Deion Sanders' fault?
I just know the discussion last year at this time of, okay, this is all fun. They're packing out the place in Boulder, but this is a really bad football team. And then they beat TCU. So the way they started versus the way they finished, vastly different. But at least Deion has admitted that. And at least they're not building the hype for a team that is probably come back down to earth a bit.
No, I think this is a good sign. I think Deion Sanders saying that they want to go to a bowl game, I think that's a realistic goal that is achievable. It's not going to be easy given their schedule. But I think this shows that he's being a little bit more realistic with expectations with this program.
Yeah, I'm looking at 5 of their 8 losses. 7 points or less, that's what they're going to point to. And instead of building up the team, Chad, he's building up individual players. Travis Hunter, Shedeur Sanders for the NFL draft. You know, that's the marketing campaign right now.
Well, and now it's all about, if you're in it for the long haul, who is that next quarterback when Shedeur Sanders gets drafted and leaves?
Right.
Like, go build that. What is the offense going to be? Are you going to get a stud recruit for your next quarterback? And are you going to have some more, not just foundation, but some legacy to your sons playing for you? To where when they leave, it's handing it off to the next generation of Colorado players
they
that
have
you've built either through the portal or through high school recruiting that right now seemingly he refuses to do.
They have Antoine Hill Jr., a 4-star, who is a part of their class for next year. He chose Colorado over Bama, Florida, and Penn State. This was October of last year. So if he's still sticking to that, there's your future at quarterback with Deion. That's the Deion effect, though. You know, you get 1, 2, 3 of these guys who are 4 or 5 stars that are joining him instead of your perennial, you know, your powerhouses, right? You know, the question is, can he just continue to have that type of impact? And that's the high school player. That's where he's actually recruiting the high school level.
I think he gets the eyeballs for the start of this season, too. It's not going to go away just after one season. People are going to be entertained. They're going to tune in. I think if they lose to the same way they did last year in year two, people will stop caring. And then they'll come back on board if he's ever relevant, right? If he's there year 3 and 4 and Colorado starts out 5-0, then suddenly it's going to be a big story on Big Noon Kickoff, College Game Day everywhere because people, they're going to be interested in Deion Sanders again. But he's not going to get this whole season. I think he gets the start of the season again. And if this season fishtails the way it did a year ago, people are going to check out on Deion Sanders. Then it's going to be about what is his substance? What are they really trying to build as a program? What's their identity? And for me, that's a little bit hard to put my finger on right now as to what exactly they are, especially considering 2 of his best players are his sons.
Yeah, and then the hype behind the draft after that and what he is or is not going to control. with that. The organizations he doesn't want his son playing for at quarterback. Did you peek ahead at any of these way too soon mock drafts by chance?
Very minimal. I've seen a little bit.
The quarterbacks this year, we have six of the top 12 picks. I've seen two quarterbacks in the first round mocked right now. And one of them, Shador, and he's in like the late teens to early 20s. Again, that's one random mock draft for 2025, and I hesitate to even bring it up. But if you needed a quarterback, it doesn't look like next year's even. It's Carson Beck, Shador, and Quinn Ewers are the top three currently.
It's amazing to me how much time we spend and energy on mocking the NFL draft and trying to gauge where people are going to go and how quickly that evaporates when picks are made.
Oh,
because year to year, I cannot tell you what I was expecting most of the time for someone to happen unless a quarterback drops substantially in the draft. We remember the quarterbacks that we thought they were going to be top five and they go to the second round. Aaron Rodgers, Will Levis, two good examples. Yeah. But there's other ones out there also. But unless it's that, I can't think of another thing that the moment it happens, all of that prep, all of that time spent thinking about it, dreading it, anticipating it, whatever you fall, whatever side of the ledger you fall on with your team, how quickly it vanishes the moment the first night and especially the second night of the draft happens.
And all the grades. There's several A's, A minus, B plus, because we're grading as a media or as a reaction to those mocks, right? Everyone's consensus of where guys should go versus where they fall. And it's based on and graded against not the best scouts in the National Football League. It's not graded by the teams that make these selections. It's graded by those evaluating mock drafts and comparing where a player we thought would go versus where they actually fell. It's not an accurate assessment. Let's put it that way. We're actually better off, Chad, grading these drafts as like a D or an F because I'll have a better hit rate overall than some of the expectations that we have for these players, especially in the first or second round that should come in and just be instant gold jacket Pro Football Hall of Famers. I'm better off saying this guy's not going to reach that pinnacle. He's not going to be the savior of a franchise. And by and large, your general manager and head coach blew it this weekend. They're going to be fired in less than 3 years. In 2020, all of the COVID issues, couldn't do the draft in person. The meetings were over Zoom. There were 256 players selected in that draft. Chad, guess how many players are still with the team that drafted him today?
From 2020, from
the 2020 draft?
Out of how many?
256 total picks.
Can I give you a percentage?
Yes, but I'd rather
go ahead and
arrange
say,
a number.
I'm going to be so far off that I'm going to sound stupid, so tell
66
us.
66 players are with their team that drafted him from 2020. And that's the whole, look, fifth-year option BS that we talk about. Like, it's such a crapshoot, and even more so without the analysis of who the person actually is. The hit rate is very, very small. If you get a single or a double on rounds four through seven of the draft, you've nearly hit a home run with expectations for your franchise.
Also, let's get away from the grading scale altogether.
Well, the grading scale, though, is based on the mocks that you're bringing up.
Yeah, it's based on, well, in everyone, it's based on how much they love someone, right, going in. So then if that perception is gone, then all of a sudden, oh, well, I had this guy as a second-round pick, and it was this team's fifth-round pick.
The value.
So now I'm
going to
give
best
them
available.
I'm going to give them all the value of that, and I'm going to give them a knock-up in the grade when, in fact, well, the league viewed this person as a fifth-round pick because no one picked them in the second round the way you thought.
Right.
What I mean by doing away with the grades mean nothing to me. All I care about, and we're going to get into a little bit of this, what jumped out to you as especially awful and what jumped out to you as an analyst as especially great? I think, Hutton, to your point about you could just give everyone a D or an F and put it there, that's 25 teams in the league.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a group of 25 that just did about the standard.
And 4 years from now, having
a
coach.
Or what you expected. And then that group, put them in one side and really tell me, and I know you can do this by who you give an F or an A+, but I don't care about the letter grades. I'm not in eighth grade anymore. Just give me what jumped out to you as good, really good, and what jumped out to you as really bad.
I try to be a realist with this. So the initial, like, The F is Atlanta, because Atlanta went with Michael Penix Jr. at number 8, right? Shocked everybody. But trust me when I say there are other Fs in this first round.
Oh, yeah.
But there, no one's willing to say this is an awful pick like Michael Penix Jr. because said player was a need or was within the range of where he was actually going in the draft in the first round, according to the mocks of guys who aren't good enough to be hired by an NFL franchise currently. Right? Like that's the perception I have, is just the what we see versus what we actually receive here is a bit different. Now, there is a nice range. I do think, you know, you have the analyst. I love Dane Brugler. Kiper is, the NFL draft is what it is because of Mel Kiper Jr. They have a very solid range of where these players will actually fall. But because so-and-so has Joe Alt going 7 because all these other teams are going quarterback, wide receiver, they don't know. Who knows what Jim Harbaugh is
going to do?
Well,
look, I love Dane Brugler, and he's the guy that I read with his beast every year because it's just so much, you know, fact about each player and prospect and background, and he does his research and all that. But Dane Brugler also refuses to be negative. So, like, yeah, he ranks the teams. He doesn't give out letter grades, but I'm reading his stuff today, and his two categories are favorite pick and day 3 pick who could surprise. So these are two positive things. So I have a hard time when you don't also give me the, tell me what you didn't like about it. And he does that because in his industry, in his business, it does not behoove him to be overly negative about a prospect or about a team or anything like that because of the access he needs and what he does. But I'd like a little bit of negative if you think negative about someone. Now, granted, I can see right here, he's got the Atlanta Falcons 32nd.
Okay. Yeah.
That's negative, right? But then you look below it, favorite pick. Brandon Dorless, defensive lineman, Oregon, and day 3 pick who could surprise,
but at least
J.D. Bertrand from Notre Dame.
At least those are two names we don't hear very often.
Yeah, he's given you two positives, though.
Yeah, and we're going to give winners and losers. But
tell me what you hated.
Mine's from the perspective of what teams needed and what they actually accomplished versus the talent that you and I watched in a college football season.
Yeah.
Hey, you, Chad, you know this as well as I do. There are a lot of NFL writers that don't watch college football. And there are a lot
there's a lot of
NFL writers that are grading drafts right now.
Let me take it a step further. There's a lot of NFL writers who have a disdain for college football.
Sure.
It's not just that they don't watch it. They outwardly hate
and
the
sport. What are they doing today? Grading college
football
players.
They're talking about college. Boy, this guy was a big inline blocking
grading
tight
college
end.
Football
and I'm thinking,
players.
How do you know?
Yeah, they don't.
And what
they
do you
know
care?
Based on what Dane Brugler wrote. That's how they know, to
no,
Dane's credit.
I agree with you there. I cannot stand the pro football guy who's anti-college football.
And then this
that
weekend.
Then has to talk NFL draft. Because I have long said I love this because it's the handshake and the marriage of my two favorite things. College football, meet NFL football. Let's get together and have a ton of people go to Detroit, Michigan over 3 days and celebrate it and watch it on TV. I love the event for that reason. I cannot stand the NFL person who outwardly mocks the college game, that's usually from some major northeastern city that grew up only rooting for pro sports and only watching it, and went to some small liberal arts college or some Ivy League school and wanted to get into journalism. They hate everything from the South. They hate everything from the Midwest. They hate everything college. They hate pageantry. They hate the whole thing. And then they're going to start typing about, boy, I saw this guy at Oklahoma State, and he really got after him, thinking, shut up, dude. You don't know a thing about what you're talking about because I saw you mock Oklahoma State, or I saw you mock the SEC or the Big Ten or whatever college we're talking about throughout the season. I do have a personal distaste for that person. And they're all over the place, the person I'm talking about.
Here is the grades from USA Today, for instance. Right after the draft, where the Kansas City Chiefs traded up two spots, traded up to draft Patrick Mahomes. USA Today's reaction, C-. Calling Mahomes a project is a major understatement. He's nowhere near ready to play in the NFL, and honestly,
didn't even play his first year.
He may never be. May never be. Between his inconsistent accuracy due to poor mechanics, his tendency to bail from clean pockets, and his lack of field vision, he's going to leave as many big plays on the field as he creates. This is a risky pick. And then here's a D from SB Nation. Chiefs gave up picks 27-91 and a 2018 first-round pick to take a backup quarterback. At least for a season, that's what this pick is in reality. While this move helps Kansas City in the future, what does it do immediately in 2017 and 2018? It doesn't give them a top cornerback opposite Marcus Peters. It doesn't give them a linebacker they need. It gives them a developmental player. Look, I like Mahomes as a person and a prospect. I just don't like the value at all. Of course, I'll look like an idiot if the Brett Favre comparisons come true. Well, he's better. Even better. Blew those comparisons out of the water.
I'd like to speak this into existence right now for Outkick.com.
Well, we're doing it. We're doing it with Michael Penix Jr. currently.
No, and we'll get into our stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever. In written form. I don't know if Armando Salguero's rating his best and worst or favorite, least favorite drafts and all that. That's fine because people will read it. Here's what I'd like to do, and I'd like for Outkick to be the leader in this. I want Armando and I want everyone who covers drafts at the very start, the first paragraph or two of your story, I want you to link your worst draft take in history, like the ones we just read about Patrick Mahomes, along with your best. Where everyone else was bashing someone's draft and you were ahead of the curve and you saw it and loved this draft pick. I want to see both. I'd love to read that for everyone who analyzes drafts. Everyone's got a good and a bad one. Doesn't mean I'm not going to read your work, but I'd like for you to put it right out there in the front. I'm going to rate this year's draft class. Here was my worst take of all time in the NFL draft on a Monday after the draft was over. And here is my best take of all time. I'd love to see that with everyone. Because everyone's got something good and something bad. I'd like to see just how bad it was or just how good it was.
You know what was great? Not just good, but great? Detroit as the host city. But the scenes from Detroit were awesome. 750,000 fans, the estimate, were in attendance over the weekend. And for a city that has been in economic decline, has hosted two Super Bowls and a Final Four during that really bad stretch. And other championships in the city. With the decline in just overall population, they're up 620,000, I believe, which is 28% below the population the last time they hosted a Super Bowl. We're seeing the comeback, and I like to see scenes like this from cities that have a perception of being really down and out versus the city that I want to see, which is more of this. Especially with what we've seen in recent years. Props for what was a fun weekend. This is the closest I've seen, Chad. Maybe right on par. Don't know. I wasn't there. I was here in 2019. The closest I've seen to a Nashville-type scene.
Yeah. It's easy to root for this type of story, too, for the reasons you said. I think when you go to a place like Detroit that universally, you know, people kind of snicker about and it's not the top vacation destination – people that are from there or live there have this like pent-up frustration, and they walk around with an edge about
it. A little grit.
That they want to prove people wrong, too. Oh, you think Detroit sucks? Well, let's break the all-time record for draft attendance and show up, and we'll show you that it's better than you think. They defend it. They can make fun of it, right? It's like your family member. Hey, I can make fun of my little brother, but you better not say a damn word about my little brother, or we're going to fight. That's Detroiters. That's... in our state, people in Memphis have that edge about them that, you know, if you dare make fun of Memphis and not wanting to go to Memphis, people that live in Memphis or are from Memphis,
fighting words.
Even though a lot of them moved away, by the way, to Nashville or Knoxville or Louisville or somewhere else, they will fight you about it and tell you how great Memphis is. I think Detroit has got that same personality. I love it.
Is it the downward hook 'em horns for them?
I think just any negative, yeah, I think so.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You just talk trash about the city.
Vince Young will fight you over the downward hook of
horns. Samurai kick.
Tim the Toolman Taylor will fight you over talking trash about Detroit. Same thing.
Maybe so. Future NFL draft sites, we know it's Green Bay next year. Beyond that, we don't know. NFL meetings are actually coming up here in Nashville at the end of next month. And we'll learn the future sites. Pittsburgh has put in a bid recently, and I know that the league has looked at Pittsburgh. Charlotte is another one that's really pushing hard for the draft. Cincinnati and Denver are the other two. Beyond that, I haven't heard of any other NFL cities. Those are the sites that we will see the NFL draft move to next.
Charlotte last on that list for me.
Pittsburgh one.
Should I work in ascending order? Charlotte would be last.
Charlotte's last. Pittsburgh or Cincinnati? Denver would be fun.
Pittsburgh before Cincinnati. I would go Denver, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Charlotte,
now,
in that order.
Now, as far as atmosphere, Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I would say Pittsburgh. I think Cincinnati could be sneaky decent,
sneaky
too.
Sneaky good?
Get all those people from Covington, Kentucky.
You do have the downtown scene there, but the view in Pittsburgh, very underrated.
I think Pittsburgh would be cool.
You know, the Pirate Stadium, the backdrop, it's beautiful the way they have the bridge and everything set up.
I wish Denver had more of a, like their stadium was downtown and not where it is, like more of a downtown scene with the stadium and the backdrop. But Denver would be cool. I'm going Denver, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Charlotte.
We'll have the NFL headquarters for the draft at Black Hawk Casino in Denver.
Charlotte.
Just don't give the perception that you're gambling there.
Charlotte ranks close to Jacksonville in terms of places I really need to see a draft take place in, which by that I mean last.
Last
in the league.
Chad.
I'd rather see it in Buffalo.
Winners and losers for the draft, just perception-wise for me, Eagles. Come away. They needed two starters at corner. They needed one. They have two. They end up with Mitchell in the first round and then draft DeJean in the second round. And DeJean was mocked in the first round, but they end up with two solid corners for a massive need. Chicago, I think, got it right. They didn't have a ton of picks, but they add Rome Odunze to that wide receiving room and the three pack of wide receivers that they have. To pair with Caleb Williams, they've done a nice job there, and they've bolstered their offensive line in recent drafts, too. And I like the Steelers just going straight offensive line for the most part. They bulked up, kind of trying to get that edge back. Good job by Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Chicago.
I'm going to go Chiefs as a winner. It's amazing how Xavier Worthy, who runs a 4.2-something 40, is there for the Chiefs, and they picked him, and I'm thinking, boy, they just found their next Tyreek Hill. Great job, Chiefs. And then they get, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, Kingsley, the big offensive tackle from BYU in the second round. He falls later than most expect, and the Chiefs are able to get him also. There's a reason the Chiefs are a dynasty, and it's not just because of Patrick Mahomes. It's because they make great decisions around Patrick Mahomes also. That this was another example. My big loser, the team right here in Nashville, the Tennessee Titans, I'm so tired of the Titans. And J.C. Latham, it seems like a really good football player. But when you have such a defined need, there is no need to just draft some positionless guy. There's a reason J.C. Latham didn't play left tackle at Alabama. So when you draft a guy to play left tackle who couldn't do it in college, and you just think he's going to plug in and be your left tackle forever, maybe it works out. I don't like that. I prefer to draft a left tackle. Much like a year ago with Peter Skoronski, you draft a guy who played tackle in college, but he's a guard. And you're going to use that high of a pick on a guard. I hate this. Draft a guy that he's played that position. You've seen him play it a lot, not back in high school. You know how good he is that position. And plug him in and play that position. Did not like what the Titans did there. I did like T'Vondre Sweat in the second round for the Titans.
What
I understand
a massive
the DWI is scared a lot of teams off in the draft process. But I do think he's got a lot of potential. I don't love what the Titans did with the first round.
Me, it's just individuals. Kirk Cousins. I mean, how do you feel good about how the draft went, regardless of what Atlanta did after the first round? I guess you feel great because you signed $100 million guaranteed this offseason. He's won the contract draft from what he's done.
I wonder
his career.
If he can kind of double dip with this because now it's so clearly a one and done scenario for him.
Yeah.
In Atlanta, where you just go and ball out, you're likely going to be the starter to begin. And if you do well and don't get hurt, then Michael Penix Jr. is the quarterback the next year. Well, you're cut loose. Could you sign another contract for 2 years somewhere else and finish out your career?
They could, but I don't know if they can cut him based on the cap hit with this. And he has a no-trade clause yet. Kirk Cousins says.
Yeah, that puts...
I know.
Falcons in a worse spot than him.
And they put themselves in it, though.
Yeah.
You know? The other one's Daniel Jones. Despite them sticking and picking and going with Malik Nabers, which is a great pick, Armando came on with me Friday, and he was, he's the one that was reporting like New York was trying so desperately to move up to draft Drake May. They wanted Drake May so bad, and they couldn't do it. So I was like, I guess we'll just stick with Daniel Jones. And that's not a ringing endorsement yet again.
Such a vote of confidence.
Giants quarterback. We have a vote of confidence. Always with Tank Williams. We'll talk with Cynthia Freeland as well. We're always confident in her. Tank Williams joins us next here on Hot Mic.
Hey, look, I'm a dad. I know what dads want for Father's Day. That is steak, world-class Omaha steaks. Dads deserve top-quality American beef, and that's what they'll get with Omaha Steaks Deluxe Father's Day gift. For just $89.99, he'll get mouth-watering Omaha steaks, butcher's cut top sirloins, juicy boneless pork chops, deli-style gourmet jumbo franks, and their legendary Omaha Steak burgers. Go to omahasteaks.com, use promo code OUTKICK at checkout to order the deluxe Father's Day gift and get four additional burgers absolutely free. That's 24 unforgettable entrees for just $89.99 when you use promo code OUTKICK at checkout. Again, that's omahasteaks.com, use code OUTKICK and get deluxe Father's Day gift plus four free burgers today.
Sixth and Peabody, your location with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Glad you're with us. Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow rolls on this Monday edition, the hangover edition from the NFL draft. Tank Williams joins us, great friend of the show, former NFL safety, football analyst, and much more. Tank, good to see you, man.
What's up, fellas? How are we feeling?
Doing great. How was your draft coverage, by the way? Did everything, you survived?
Yeah, I survived. Everything was going well.
We had a show last Thursday night, two of us and Clay. One of the games within the draft we were playing was girlfriend or sister on the screen.
The game goes back about 4 or 5 years, yes, where I started it, because sometimes you never can tell with the girl sitting next to the player, right?
You can tell.
Well, sometimes you can't tell, and then sometimes it's obvious, especially when the mom is blocking to make sure the girlfriend doesn't steal too much of the air coverage.
Yeah, so the box out technique, I mean, that is rehearsed, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of these moms, they've been watching Karl Malone and all these other power fours in the NBA for so long that it's just like clockwork for them. They understand that this is their baby's moment and this is their moment. And they're going to make sure that the shine gets on the right person. And so it's great to see.
I'm always interested, though, in how the girlfriend has talked her way into the front row. Because, you know, 10 years from now, if the guy ends up going to Canton or, you know, 20 years from now, whatever, that's going to be the shot, and you've got some girl that you're not even married to at the current time that it ends up being a part of the history.
You got to go second row?
But listen,
second
listen,
row. Mandate
we,
second
we,
row for the we girlfriend?
We all remember being in our early 20s. Like, we understand how the girlfriend talks her way into that screenshot.
Even with the parents, though?
Even with the parents, it doesn't matter. They're still young cats. So we understand.
Also, laugh at the awkward exchange when the girlfriend is like trying to knows the camera's on her. They're looking at a TV. It's on delay, but she sees that they're going to show the reaction, and she's not trying to seem overbearing to get in there and give the side hug or whatever, but also like trying to look grateful to be there, but also annoyed, but not annoyed. There's an art to that. And I think the young women out there with the guys are trying to master that art, Tank.
I think you can tell which ones are in it for the right reasons, because you have some that are truly happy for their boyfriends. You have some who have like their Zoolander pose going on just to try to make sure they got the right angle for the camera.
They know when the camera's on.
They know when the camera, and they know which camera is on it too. There's multiple cameras in the room. So I think the guys will probably go back and look at that footage and be able to tell if that's going to be wifey that they put the ring on, or if they need to go back out in that boat and go fishing for a better catch.
Man, I think we overlook the significance of money right now in the first and second round in the line, that there's a big drop off if you're drafted in the second or beyond compared to the first, and the guarantee is a rookie. Now, it wasn't that way as far as the CBA whenever you entered the league, Tank. But just hypothetically, your second round pick, if you're a first round pick, does it change your career at all?
I mean, honestly, I think no matter what, it depends on where you go. You want to be surrounded by a great group of coaches that know how to get the best of your abilities and have it in the right scheme so you can thrive. But at the same time, we know that they're going to have more patience with a first and second rounder than they will with the guy that's drafted in the middle and latter rounds. But I think that a lot of these teams have become a lot better at getting some of these players to be productive from them in the later rounds. Whether you're looking at a guy all the way like Brock Purdy, a position that's covered in the NFL, but you go in the last pick in the draft, or how you select tight ends and wide receivers. Like, one perfect example, like the Pittsburgh Steelers now, every time they select a wide receiver in the middle rounds, this time is Rowan Wilson from Michigan. I'm like, okay, that guy's going to be a dude, just because they have a track record of just being able to pick out these wide receivers in the middle rounds and have them become some of the better players in the NFL. So I think having your bread and butter like that, where you know you can go ahead and target these other positions that you have a need of, because you know you can always select one or two players in that three to fifth round range that are going to be pretty productive for you and outplay that draft status. I think that's key when you're in the executive room in the NFL.
What was your phone call like? I haven't heard that from you when Floyd Reese or Jeff Fisher called you.
It was amazing. I had a whole bunch of people at my parents' house, but then my sister lived in the same area, so I was at her house with just my parents. So I'm in the back room just watching TV by myself. My parents are in the front room. And then when they announced me on TV, they're like, hey, Tank, you got drafted. I'm like, I know, I'm on the phone with them right now. And so that was cool. So I got a chance to celebrate with just me and my parents. And then I went back to my main house and then celebrated with everyone else. And then the next morning, I'm off on the plane with Albert Hainsworth to Nashville, and the rest is history. So it was a cool experience, and went to a place that I enjoyed playing with, because my family, I had a bunch of family members that attended Alcorn. And so I was a huge Steve McNair fan growing up. And so having an opportunity to play with Steve and the likes of Eddie George, Keith, and all those guys, Samari Rowe, I mean, that was really special for me.
Nothing's going to beat Keith's story of, you know, taking a slam while Floyd Reese calls him in the bathroom.
That is crazy. I didn't know that.
You know it now. You know it now with the rest of us.
He was so pissed off at making it to the middle of the first round, he just went to the bathroom.
Yeah, he's like, now's the time.
Oh, my goodness.
Tank, I understand the thinking of, if you love a quarterback, you take him, right? That's such an important position that you got to go take that quarterback if you love them so much. But I still have a hard time understanding the Falcons, even if you love Michael Penix Jr. so much, if you loved him that much, maybe never sign Kirk Cousins, knowing you're going to draft quarterback and knowing that he's probably going to be there at number 8 when you're drafting, and you could have just drafted him then and saved yourself a lot of money, a lot of hardships with the salary cap, and a lot of other problems. What did you make of that decision for the Falcons?
I believe you hit the nail on the head, because when it first went down, that was my initial impression. Like, if you want to build a winner in the NFL, we've already seen what the model is. You lock in a young quarterback who punches above his weight early on in his career, and that allows you to put so many pieces around him because you're in a better cap situation than having to sign a veteran. We've seen it with the Houston Texans. We've seen it with so many other teams. So if you knew that Michael Penix was going to be your guy, why would you go ahead and guarantee Kirk Cousins over $100 million and then go ahead and draft this guy top 10? So one, you put yourself in a terrible cap situation moving forward. You don't notify Kirk Cousins that this is what your intentions are. So now your quarterback room is already a little bit jaded from Jump Street. And then if you feel like you can win immediately, you got two quarterbacks on your roster where you have this top-heavy draft pool. And so you end up wasting on the quarterback when you can add a running back or a wide receiver or an offensive lineman, so many other pieces to the puzzle. His arm talent, especially the way that he processes in the red zone, is phenomenal. He has one of the better deep balls in the draft. So as far as talent alone, I understand you have to deal with the knee injury issue, but as far as talent alone, like, the kid deserved to be drafted in the top 10. I just don't like the way the Falcons went about it, especially guaranteeing Kirk Cousins all that money beforehand.
Tank Williams, our guest. Tank, you would certainly crush it in this role. I would not. But if I'm hired on to be a GM, or I'm assistant GM, whatever, and I've got my own philosophy, my own beliefs on things, wouldn't I be better off trusting or following the model of Howie Roseman or Eric DaCosta, who trained under Ozzie Newsome, or Omar Khan, who's with Kevin Colbert for years, than trusting my scouts who have gotten it wrong? And that's the reason I'm here, because the previous guy was just fired. Like, some of the same, you mentioned the Steelers make a pick, and it just makes sense, right?
Yeah.
The Eagles end up with two starting corners, plus they end up with some solid Power 5 type players in the second and third day of this draft. Mm-hmm. Should I just follow their model? Because, I mean, they continue to have jobs.
Personally, I think so. I mean, it's like certain staffs, like you mentioned, whether it's the Eagles, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's the Baltimore Ravens. They have like this model that's been set, and they follow it to a T, and their teams continue to be productive. Like, it's crazy how you have some teams where, like, say, for example, the Green Bay Packers, where you lose a guy like Aaron Rodgers, you're supposed to be rebuilding, retooling, yet and still you're still one of the better teams in your division, and you're still in, you know, a shot of winning a NFC championship in the Super Bowl just last year. I mean, so I think teams like that, you have to follow the model that they have set. And I know people are trying to say that, hey, the Atlanta Falcons were trying to follow the model of the Green Bay Packers, but we know that's not true. Like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, those guys were already entrenched starters in their career, became MVPs and things like that.
And late first round picks too, not top 10 picks.
And getting the latter part of their career. So then you bring in this guy to study underneath them, and then you go ahead and let him ascend to the top dog position. But you don't do it where you guarantee Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles injury, guarantee him all that money, and then just throw a whole bunch of mud in the situation by drafting the guy a couple months later. Like, it's not the same as Green Bay. Like, what Atlanta Falcons did just made no sense. And then you look at some of the other picks that they needed. Obviously, they needed to address the defensive line, but it seemed like some of those players they could have gotten better value at. Now, I won't go ahead and poke holes in that because guys are going to be rated all throughout the draft. We really won't know how they're going to perform until they get between those white lines on Sunday. So I won't knock them for that. But you can still say that the process could have been a little bit better for the Falcons GM in their front office operations.
I'll ask you something I would ask Samari Roll, for instance, who watches these players too. Defensively, because of all the offense at the top of the draft, a lot of solid defensive players moved down, even into the second round. Who's the player tank that fell just simply because of the offensive draft that we just witnessed that is going to make a huge difference for his team and it's going to be a contender, not some team that's trying to rebuild?
Quinyon Mitchell, the cornerback that went to Philadelphia. I mean, honestly, you can look at Philadelphia. They got a steal with him, having him fall that deep into the draft. And then you get Cooper DeJean, who falls up next in the top of the second round, where I don't see him playing outside corner. But the Philadelphia Eagles have been really good at using guys like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, where this guy can play up high as a safety or slide down into the nickel. I think Cooper DeJean could be a similar player as that. So you address some depth on the outside with Quinyon Mitchell, and then you address like some of that depth at nickel and that safety with Cooper DeJean, understanding the people that you're going to have to play and beat in the NFC to make it to the Super Bowl. And so I feel like the Eagles always do a phenomenal job. You said it before, but then when you also have these situations where you know you have a need, everyone in the league knows you have a need, yet you can be patient and still get some, you know, key players who are going to help your team without having to lose a bunch of draft capital in the process. And I think that's smart. That's the smartest way to navigate a draft. And I think the Eagles do that on a consistent basis.
Take, I want to kick back and just take me behind the scenes for a minute. How much do first impressions matter for these rookies who are about to meet vets? Caleb Williams has already been meeting with the wide receivers with Chicago the offseason. I mean, they've been throwing passes, doing different things. But beyond just the top picks, just the perception of a guy coming into a locker room and the impact that he can make just by the first impression when he meets the rest of the team.
It's everything. I mean, the vets want to see you come in with your head down, work your butt off, and show that you can help the team. I mean, like, honestly, like right now, like, Keith Bullock and I mean, we're the best of friends. Like, the dude was in my wedding. But when I came to Nashville, his good friend Bam Morris, like, everyone thought Bam should have an opportunity to start when I got to Nashville. I get there. I perform well in OTAs. I get to the first week in training camp. I pull my hamstring. And so then I miss all of training camp. I didn't play until the last preseason game, which was Green Bay. Yet and still, the Titans decided to start me my rookie year. But I went in there. I didn't make mistakes. You know, I was just kind of doing my job. And then I got to the Indianapolis Colts game and I had a strip sack on Peyton Manning. Bull picks it up, runs in for a touchdown, and he was my boy ever since. So I think it's one of those things where you just have to show you and put your head down, learn the playbook, find ways to help the team, make splash plays, and the rest will take care of itself.
Have you heard Chad do the Keith Bullock laugh?
Nuh-uh.
if Keith heard that story, that's exactly how he'd respond.
I heard that laugh too many times.
I love man. That, man.
It's an infectious laugh, no doubt. Do you feel personally insulted as a defensive player in the league that a defensive player was not taken until 15th overall? And that was Latu, the edge rusher to the Colts. I feel like
and
it's
that guy
a slap
had a spinal,
in the face to you.
He had a spinal fusion.
Yeah.
Listen, You didn't even have to finish the statement. You just said, do you feel disrespected as a defensive player? And the answer is always yes. Whether we're talking about the rules that have changed in favor of the offense, man. Whether you're talking about it taking this long for a defensive player to go in the draft, but it also tells you where the league is going too. It's so hard to play defense in the NFL. The NFL wants more scoring. They want more points. And so that's why you see all this stuff at the top of the draft taking place, because teams want to be able to put points on the board. That being said, I mean, I think it's great for the teams like the Indianapolis Colts, for the Philadelphia Eagles, all these teams that need to address positions on defense, and they're able to get extreme value because of all the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and it being a deep offensive lineman class this year. And so they're able to kind of sit back and not have to shove extra capital on the table to try to move up and select some of these guys. And I think that's going to end up paying off for them in the long run. And now that we're talking about the Colts, I just want to say one thing. Like, I appreciate Chris Ballack going to bat for his wide receiver, A.D. Mitchell, because, you know, they got people throwing shade on him. You got people talking about Caleb Williams and comparing him to Prince and all that kind of nonsense. Like, I'm in the same thing. Like, if I got something constructive to say about an athlete, I'm going to just say it out there. I'm going to have my face out there. I'm going to have my name on it. Now, if they disagree, they can chirp at me on social media, do whatever, and then we can have a conversation about it. But it doesn't have to be done in a disrespectful way. And so if you're going to go out there with these anonymous comments and stuff like that, I think that there's no place in the game for that stuff. And so I appreciate Chris Ballard and everyone else who's involved with the league to come out and try to combat that stuff, because that's not what you want to hear about these guys when you have these life-changing moments that are coming up, the biggest day of their lives, and they have to hear that garbage leading up to the draft.
I heard the Prince comparison, by the way, for Caleb Williams, and I'm like, how's this a negative? I saw Prince dominate Charlie Murphy in basketball on Chappelle's show. I'm like, the guy was a hell of an athlete.
Yeah.
Everybody knows he was a great basketball player. I'm like, this is a compliment.
If he wears
to Caleb
and
Williams.
One of the best artists of all time. I mean, so it's really not a knock. I think they're just trying to talk about it because he wears the nails, and we know that Prince rolled around in pumps and blouses. But I tell you, my first concert I ever went to
Game
was a
blouses.
Prince concert in Nashville, and that dude rolled on stage in like some white pumps, some white tight pants that my mom wouldn't even wear, and then a white blouse with red hearts on it, and then just rocked the spot. So, man, I was already a Prince fan way before that because my sister put me on, but, hey, Prince is the man, so that means Caleb Williams is going to be A-OK up there in Chi-Town.
If he shows up to the first road trip in heels, then he'll be Prince of the NFL. how much weight did you gain from freshman year of college to the NFL first year?
So when I got to college, I was probably low 200s. And then by the time I made it to the league, I was damn near 230.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is that my senior year, they would always have like alumni come back. And so John Lynch came back to Stanford after a spring game. And I was just asking him, like, what's one thing I need to work on in order to be prepared for the NFL? And he was like, you know, a lot of young kids want to worry about bulking up and all that kind of stuff, but speed is the name of the game. Just make sure you stay quick and agile. And I believe that that's more prevalent in the NFL today than even when it was back when I got drafted and entered into the league. Because, you know, I think towards the latter part of my career, I was closer to 220 and in the teens versus being at 230. And now I feel like I'd be playing linebacker at about 220 and 215, and that I wouldn't even be considered as being a defensive back. And I think that's just how far the game has changed to becoming really flag football 707, where you just try to spread everyone
yes.
out. You just try to get the ball out of your hand quickly, which is why we're seeing the emphasis on already edge rushes, but now the defensive tackles are going because you can get that quick immediate pressure up the middle to impact the quarterback.
Well, that ties in. And so here's tying in the question. Tavondre Sweat, He left high school weighing 249 pounds. He played at Texas at 365. That's what he was
wow.
listed. The dude
crazy.
Gained 100 to 120 pounds. From high school last year, his last year in high school, to his first year in the NFL. Can you imagine doing that over a
Hell
four?
Hell yeah, Texas barbecue?
Man.
Absolutely.
That's a
Absolutely.
Lot, dude. That's a
Texas
lot of
barbecue,
weight, man.
A lot of weights. Hey, yeah, anything is possible, like KG say.
100
But I'm telling
pounds.
You, but, like, but that's what you love as a Tennessee Titan, where you have this guy who's that big, yet
yeah.
he's still, like, you know what he started off as. Like, he started off as, like, 249, so you know he has the quick feet and everything else. And you pair him with Big Hefe, and you already did all that work on the secondary, too. Like, man, the Titans' defense should be something vicious.
Man, it's still being a second-round pick and gaining 120 pounds in college.
Some dudes are just different, too, and they can play
wow,
at that
dude.
Weight and move at that weight and do all those things. I would think red flag. because they also he even said, like, I was probably closer to 380 at times, listed at 365, yeah. And I'm thinking,
hey, did you hear his line? He said if he could give up fried sushi and calamari, he'll be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, now, but look, he's also, we're not asking him to be Zion Williamson, right? No. Who was too big, and it hurt him, and yeah. It led to injury problems in the NBA. But, I mean, there are guys who can play in the interior at that size, so maybe it works out. What
yeah,
do I
tell
know?
My dude to keep eating. Yeah, we want that big beef up front.
Vince Wilfork up front. Tank, appreciate you, man. Always great to catch up with you, and be sure to ask KB about that draft day story.
I don't even think I want to know the details more than what we know right now. But
get,
you know,
so. Get them laughing. Just do laughing. Anything to get them laughing, because then everyone will start laughing.
Thank you, Tank.
See you, fellas.
Yeah, one of our great friends of the show there, Tank Williams, NFL and sports betting analyst. You can catch him on social at TankWilliams13. Just around the corner, Cynthia Freeland with her analysis, the analytical approach to
always
the NFL
great.
Draft. And our Scorched Earth top headlines of the day, which will include Caleb Williams and the confidence level that he has that another Big Ten quarterback certainly did not have for his college team. That's straight ahead here on Hot Mic.